हरिः ॐ सहनौ सहनौ भुनक्थु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, so now we've had they've done the purification of the new assembly hall, and all the great sages in that have come. The Pandavas have greeted them all, taken care. Narad Muni came with some of his associates and discussed about how instructions for Yudhishthira Maharaj, and then having discussed all those things, Yudhishthira Maharaj asked about the different assembly halls throughout the universe that the demigods have. And so he explained some of those, and then he wanted to know if he had a conversation with his own father, with Pandu, and then Pandu had recommended him do the Rajasuya sacrifice. And then after that, Narad Muni was going to Dwarka to see Krishna, and then he and his associates left. After Narada's departure, the Pandavas continued to live peacefully at Indraprastha. But Yudhishthira was contemplating how he might perform the Rajasuya sacrifice. He knew that it required vast wealth. It also necessitated his being able to establish his indisputable power over all other kings. How would it ever be possible? There were certain kings who would never accept him as their emperor. The mighty Jarasandha of Magadha, for example. Jarasandha was sinful, and he had already conquered all the districts surrounding his kingdom. Right, so he's sinful, he's powerful, he's conquered everything around his capital. So right there, that means there's a whole section that's not, because of him, not going to accept Yudhishthira's sovereignty. So Yudhishthira had heard that Jarasandha imprisoned the kings he defeated with the intention to sacrifice them to Shiva. Jarasandha was ambitious. He already had designs on the emperor's seat, right? He wasn't going to do it as the Rajasuya. He wanted to do it. He just wanted to be the most powerful king. And he was not an easy opponent to defeat. Yudhishthira realized that he would only be able to perform the Rajasuya with Krishna's help. Yudhishthira's kingdom was flourishing under his leadership, and his citizens were devoted to piety. They had everything they desired. The Pandavas saw the citizens as family. Yudhishthira was more than a father to them, and no one in the kingdom entertained any hostile feelings towards him. Gradually he became known as Ajatashatru, one without an enemy. Means he doesn't have anybody that he sees an enemy. Doesn't mean that there might not be an inimical person, but he doesn't see anyone that way. And due to his religious leadership, the gods were also pleased, and thus the kingdom was not afflicted by fire, disease, or other natural disturbances. So he sees when there's natural disturbances, this means people aren't behaving properly, so therefore the demigods not being pleased, then they don't manage the all these natural facilities for the earth in the normal way. They restrict them, or they're too much, or this, because people aren't behaving properly. Still thinking about the sacrifice, Yudhishthira called an assembly of ministers and advisors. When they were all seated in the great council chamber of the Pandavas hall, which was called the Maya Sabha, because it was built by Maya, Yudhishthira began to address them, his voice resounding like a drum. I wish to perform the Rajasuya, having been asked to do so by the great sage Narada. I can understand that the gods must surely desire it. I do not want dominion over this earth for myself, but I wish to fulfill the God's purpose, and especially that of the Supreme Lord. So we see in Bhagavatam that the idea is in 10th canto it's explaining that Yudhishthira Maharaj was thinking it's a great opportunity to establish Krishna as the Supreme Lord. Because in the sacrifice, then of everybody who's there, and that then you worship somebody as the topmost, you know, the most senior of everybody. So since all the great kings of the earth, all the demigods will be there, then if Krishna's there, then by establishing him as the senior most, then you establish Krishna's
position
in relationship to everybody else. Everybody is subservient to Krishna. Yudhishthira also considered that if he invited Krishna to the sacrifice, he could arrange that he be honored as the chief person present. That would establish the Lord's fame and position all over the world. Krishna was superior to even the greatest gods, such as Brahma and Shiva. Yudhishthira expected those gods to attend his sacrifice. So if people saw them worshipping Krishna as supreme, then Krishna's position above those deities would be established. When Domya spoke, O king, you are worthy to become the emperor of the world. Therefore, perform this sacrifice and establish yourself as such. We shall light the six fires and chant the sacred mantras. But first, you must gain the acquiescence of the world's monarchs. After that, you will surely become the undisputed king of this wide earth. Having gained the permission of his priests and counselors, Yudhishthira discussed the means by which he might proceed. They all agreed that he should immediately consult Krishna. Krishna would certainly provide infallible advice. Yudhishthira then thought of Krishna all the more intensely, praying that he might soon come to his assistance. Chapter 16, Mighty Jarasandha. After leaving Indraprastha, Krishna had traveled quickly back to Dwarka. As he entered the city, his relatives, friends, and countless citizens greeted him. After approaching King Ugrasena to offer respects, Krishna saluted Balaram and then went to see his wives and sons. Finally, he entered the palace of his principal queen, Rukmini, to rest. During the coming months, he heard about the Pandavas' incomparable assembly hall. He also heard that Subhadra's first son had been born, named Abhimanyu. Krishna was joyful to hear that the Pandavas were flourishing, and he began to desire to see them again. Each day, Krishna went to the Sudharma assembly hall to meet with the citizens. Vishwakarma, the architect of the gods, had constructed this hall, and it had the special quality of freeing those who entered it from the six kinds of material sufferings: hunger, thirst, lamentation, illusion, old age, and death. When Krishna entered the hall, he would bow before King Ugrasena, then take a seat on a bejeweled golden throne. Although not Dwarka's king, Krishna was nevertheless respected as the most important person present. The city's inhabitants understood his divine status. They regarded him as their natural leader, especially after he had personally deposed the previous king, Kamsa, Ugrasena's cruel son, and freed them from his reign of terror. So this is the point, as you see in the Vedic system. You don't have to be the top manager to be actually the top of the system, the senior most. So the senior most comes because of the spiritual position. So that's the actual position. And then from that, then the ruling class then rules accordingly, according to the direction of those who have that proper knowledge and devotion. Once everyone was settled in the hall, jesters, dancers, and musicians were called out to entertain the Yadavas. Brahmins recited Vedic texts or chanted hymns and prayers, and one could hear the sounds of mridanga, drums, flutes, bells around the hall, as well as blasts from numerous conch shells. Krishna and Balaram enjoyed the various performances, and they resembled the sun and moon amid so many shining planets. Right, so all the Yadavas are like the planets, and the sun and moon and Krishna and Balaram. One day, soon after Krishna had received news of the opening of the Maya Sabha, a stranger arrived at the Sudharma Hall. Krishna gave him permission to enter, and he stepped forward with folded palms. The man introduced himself as a king from a distant territory, one that Jarasandha had conquered. He explained how the Magadha king had become more and more aggressive, how he imprisoned the thousands of kings he conquered, and how he kept them in a wretched condition until he was ready to kill them. He had managed to escape and had come as a messenger on the other king's behalf. So all these thousands of kings, he came as a messenger to let them all know. Krishna, O unlimited one, so this is the message, we beg you to deliver us from our miserable condition. Jarasandha is as powerful as 10,000 elephants. He has been able to imprison us just like a lion captures a flock of sheep. You are the most powerful person and are always kindly disposed to those who seek your shelter. Therefore, please act for our good fortune. It was well known that Krishna had fought and defeated Jarasandha many times, but the evil monarch had somehow escaped with his life. Jarasandha hated Krishna for killing Kamsa, who was both Jarasandha's friend and his son-in-law. Right? So all his daughters were married to Kamsa. In an attempt to avenge Kamsa, Jarasandha had marched against the Yadus again and again at the front of a vast army. But each time his army had been destroyed, and he had returned in shame to his kingdom to rebuild his forces. So he went back alone. He came with an Akshahini of soldiers. He went back alone each time, so 17 times like that. Still burning with hatred for Krishna, right? So I'm sure each time the hatred gets a touch more. Krishna looked compassionately at the messenger. As he was about to reply, Narad Rishi suddenly entered the hall. The sage came before Krishna, who immediately rose with his ministers to offer his heartfelt obeisances. So he sees that Narad Muni had left Yudhishthira's court and talked about the Rajasuya, and then he went to Dwarka. So then this must be, you know, basically all happening at the same time. Krishna offered the sage a seat and personally worshipped him with Argya. Because Argya is offered, Argya, Madhupar, these are offered after, you know, somebody comes after a long time. Great personalities after a long time. Great personalities to live there, you don't use it. It's just, you know, like Narad Muni, he comes every now and again, then you offer the Argya. He then said, O sage among the gods, it is fortunate indeed that we see you here today. You are able to travel freely throughout the worlds, and therefore you know everything. Please tell us how the Pandavas are faring at present, and what are Yudhishthira's plans? Krishna's question was significant. By his mystic power, he understood that Yudhishthira desired to perform the Rajasuya sacrifice, which would entail conquering Jarasandha. Right? So you can see it's connected. So he, by him doing the Rajasuya, he has to conquer Jarasandha. These kings of somehow or another, one of their representatives has come, asked that they be freed. So it works out very nicely. Narada replied, My dear Lord, I know that nothing is beyond your knowledge, yet still you act like an ordinary man and question me. I can therefore tell you that Yudhishthira is as well established in his kingdom as Indra is in Amaravati. He now desires to perform the great Rajasuya sacrifice, and he is making the necessary preparations. Even now he is praying that you will go to Indraprastha and assist him. Indeed, he has asked me to come and invite you. Krishna thanked Narada for the information and turned to his chief advisor, Uddhava. What should be done? Uddhava replied, It seems that you can achieve two things at once. By going to Indraprastha, you will both enable your cousin to perform the sacrifice and bring about Jarasandha's destruction. Jarasandha has now amassed such a large army that the only way we can defeat him is in a one-on-one encounter. Right? Means, of course, Lord's pastime means previously as he himself with a small group of men went out and defeated Jarasandha alone. You know, didn't his men, no one was injured. Jarasandha's side was everybody, the last man was killed. So then, in here, then it's just that it'll be a pastime, that it is very big, so then you don't want to go through all that, and that, because that's what the Shastra says, if you can avoid war, you would do that, because it's just so destructive. And so here, it says that one-on-one combat, now that's something where you could defeat, and it's if you ask them to do that, because before, the kings did lead the fighting. So therefore, then, if it's your man against his, or the leader of this one place against that other leader, then it was accepted as you know, instead of a whole battle, you just have the one champion. And so we see even in history, you know, around the world, this would sometimes be practiced. So then Uddhava, because he knows all the Shastras very well, so he's then explaining that this would be the best, because otherwise then you lose, you know, so much destruction is there. This way you just kill him and then the problem is solved. Only one person is capable of facing him in hand-to-hand combat, Bhima. If Bhima approaches Jarasandha disguised as a Brahmana, then he can beg from him a fight. Jarasandha is famous for never refusing a Brahmin's request. My dear Krishna, you should accompany him to Magadha. He will certainly be successful in the fight if you are there to guide him. The assembly voiced their approval, because this king has just come. So in this way, you're freeing these kings by defeating Jarasandha, which has to be done because of the Rajasuya sacrifice. So it all works out very, very nicely. The Yadus had already been planning how to kill the belligerent Jarasandha. This seemed like a good solution. Krishna therefore agreed to go to Indraprastha. Reassuring the imprisoned king's messenger, he took permission to depart from King Ugrasena and his father Vasudev, then rose and left the assembly. Krishna decided to travel in state with all his family members to Indraprastha, so he arranged the Yadus in a long procession around him. Amid the sounds of bugles, drums, trumpets, and conch shells, the party left Dwarka on thousands of golden chariots adorned with jewels, silks, and flags. Soldiers armed with swords and lances and mounted upon great black horses protected them on all sides. The noble ladies proceeded in their palanquins. Behind them, bulls, mules, and asses carried supplies and paraphernalia for the long journey. Krishna and Rukmini traveled in the center of the procession on a chariot driven by Daruka and Jaitara, his two personal servants. The party passed through the provinces of Anarta, Sauvira, and Kurukshetra. They crossed the rivers Drishtavati and Saraswati, and then passed through the districts of Panchala and Matsya. Finally, they arrived at the outskirts of Indraprastha and sent an advance party to inform the Pandavas they would soon arrive. You know, because when you get there, it can't be that when you get there, then no one knows what's going on. So, because they're a great party, they'll move slower. They send an advance party that goes quickly, and then the arrangements are made. When Yudhishthira heard that Krishna had arrived, he cried out in joy. Along with his brothers, he immediately ran out of the city to greet him. He ordered the royal musicians to play and learned Brahmins to recite sacred hymns from the Vedas. The Pandavas then embraced Krishna with affection and led him into Indraprastha. Krishna saw that the city was festively decorated with festoons, streamers, and colorful garlands. Thousands of citizens crowded in the streets as he passed by with the Pandavas on his way to their palace. Possession of Yadavas followed him, moving with difficulty through the thick crowds. Indraprastha's chief citizens and leaders led them all to the royal quarters. After Krishna had rested and refreshed himself and his family had been settled, Yudhishthira approached him to discuss the Rajasuya. My dear Krishna, I desire to perform the sacrifice, but I wonder if I shall be successful. Please tell me what is best for me. I know you will never speak out of any motive other than my welfare. Right. So in other words, if it's good for him to do, he'll say. If it's bad for him to do, he'll say. So he says he's always going to speak for his benefit. Therefore, I shall depend entirely upon your words in deciding my course of action. Right? Because here to say we see is that I shall depend entirely upon your words in deciding my course of action. So whatever Krishna say, he's going to follow authority. But at the same time, in deciding my course of action, Krishna doesn't tell him what to do. He tells him what he thinks he should do. So that's the whole, this is the relationship between the advisor and the king. The king makes the decision. He applies it. It's his decision. It's his application. Therefore, if it works out, it's his glory. And if something goes wrong, it's his fault. Right? And for the advisor, they only give advice. They give what the best they can with the situation and what's practical. But they don't enforce it. They don't have any authority to enforce it. This dynamic is a very, very important dynamic. It's not understood especially in the modern context, where people strive to be the head of the religion and the head of state. But the point is, no, they're two different elements. So the head of state should be very religious and respect the religious authority. But the religious authority does not control or run the state. Right? So you see that there's always been problems when these two overlap. When the state controls the religion or the religion controls the state, there's always a problem. So the two are separate things. So this separation of church and state, but that doesn't mean that state doesn't follow religion. Right, and church is not involved with the state. It just means that there's a point. Advisors come up to a point, and that's where it stops. They give their advice, and then you take it or not. It's up to you. Then the point is if you do take it, then they feel inspired to give more direction. If you don't take it, they can decide that they won't do that, that office anymore. You know, they'll go and do other things or go somewhere else. And at the same time, the king, he takes the advice. You know, I mean, he uses intelligence. He's trained, so he takes it. If it sounds good, he uses it. But if he finds that there's a regular thing, the advice is not good, he can find other advisors. So it's not fixed, but it's a natural relationship. You have knowledge. You're working for the benefit of the king, you know, giving him good advice. And the king, that he's trained in everything, and he knows how to follow authority, but at the same time, being trained, he knows how to apply what's been said and see if that's appropriate. If not, he'll ask questions, give other aspects. Yudhishthira sat in his hall surrounded by his brothers. An iridescent glow from the thousands of celestial gems set in the walls lit up their faces as they looked at Krishna. Right, so the gems themselves are lighting the palace. They looked at Krishna, awaiting his advice. In the expectant silence of the hall, the soft murmur of Brahmins chanting hymns could be heard, drifting in from nearby temples. Krishna sat peacefully. So we see here is the state. There's all these. The religion is part of the thing. Right? Krishna sat peacefully with his hands in his lap. Maidservants adorned with bright golden ornaments fanned him gently with chamaras and fans made of peacock feathers. Turning to Yudhishthira, he said, "You are fit in every way to perform the Rajasuya sacrifice and become the world emperor. But you will first have to overthrow the powerful Jarasandha, who has formed a near invincible alliance with numerous other monarchs. He's extended his influence and control throughout the middle portion of the earth and has designs on the rest. He is the biggest stumbling block to your plans." Krishna then listed the names of the many kings subservient to Jarasandha. All were Krishna's enemies, and he and Balaram had defeated many of them in various battles over the years. Now they had come together under Jarasandha's leadership. With these kings united, their armies would be impossible to defeat. What then do you think should be done, O descendant of Kuru? How will you overpower Jarasandha? They're saying like this because it's a human pastime, so they take this kind of mood like that. Bhima leapt to his feet. It would not be wise to send out an army to oppose Jarasandha in his own province, right? Because it's just such a great army. We should challenge him to single combat. I have the strength to defeat him, and you, Krishna, are expert in policy. Arjuna always brings victory. Therefore, let us three go to Magadha and challenge him. I am confident of success. Right? So, between Bhima's strength, Krishna's expert in policy, and Arjuna's, just by him being around, everything's always victorious, then he thinks, you know, this will work. Krishna replied, "This is my thought also," because remember, before Uddhava mentioned about Krishna being there, because by him being there, then wherever Krishna is, whatever he desires, it'll work. But now Bhima's added in, bring in Arjuna, because he being the great devotee, then there'll be victory. And then Krishna will be happy with that also. "Indeed, the wise Uddhava advised me in the same way. I, for one, am prepared to accompany Bhima and Arjuna to Magadha to bring about the sinful Jarasandha's death." Yudhishthira was uncertain, right? Because he doesn't want, these three are dear to him. And so he's just thinking if they go there, then Jarasandha, who knows what will happen. He moved uneasily on his throne. how can I allow you to go on my behalf, right? Because it's, they're going on his behalf. Something goes wrong then. He asked, how too can I risk the lives of Bhima and Arjuna? They are my eyes and you are my mind. Krishna, bereft of any of you, I could not possibly continue to live. Do not go. I think that even Yamaraj would not be able to face Jarasandha. Pray desist from this determination to fight with him. I shall give him my desire to perform the Rajasuya. It seems an impossible goal. Right? Because he doesn't want to lose his brothers or Krishna like that. So then he thinks, since we have to defeat him and this is the only way to defeat, then we'll give up. Yudhishthira's voice was pleading. His love for Krishna overpowered any thought of Krishna's divinity and unassailable position, right? Because Krishna being God, what's the problem? But because they're playing these human pastimes then. Arjuna then spoke. We are born in a race famed for its valor and prowess. How can we, like weak men, shrink back in fear of an enemy? We are Kshatriyas. Our duty is to fight and, if necessary, lay down our lives in battle. There can be no higher act for us than to fight Jarasandha and try to rescue the imprisoned kings. Right? So it must have been that Krishna's also brought this out. If we do not go, men shall revile us as worthless. Such dishonor would be worse than death. Krishna agreed, right? So it's also about all this, the flavor and that, and the discussions and like that. Arjuna has shown the mood of one born in the Bharata race. We do not know when death will overtake us. Nor have we heard that immortality has been obtained by desisting from battle. Right, so his point is this, you don't know when you're going to die, and we've never seen that anybody has lived forever by not going into battle. The wise have decreed that one should, by taking recourse in strength and policy, confront his enemies. Well, let's therefore encounter Jarasandha. Either we shall kill him, or being ourselves killed, ascend to heaven. Yudhishthira then became curious to know more of Jarasandha's history. Krishna explained that he had been born to King Brihadratha, a powerful ruler of Magadha, when a rishi had blessed the king to attain a son. The rishi had given Bharadratha a charmed mango to give to his senior queen, but the king divided it into two so that both his queens might conceive. Both queens then gave birth to only half a child. The sorrowing queens threw the two halves into the forest, where a Rakshasa woman named Jara had picked them up. She put them together, and the child suddenly came to life with a roar. Jara returned the baby to the king, who named him Jarasandha, or one who is joined by Jara. Krishna added, the time has now come to destroy this Jarasandha. Without a doubt, Bhima will defeat him in single combat. Jarasandha will not refuse to fight. Therefore, Yudhishthira, grant us your permission to depart. Yudhishthira assented to Krishna's desire. Seeing your mind set upon this purpose, O Keshava, I consider Jarasandha already killed and all the imprisoned kings released. You will certainly lead Bhima and Arjuna to victory over that evil monarch. O Krishna, what cannot be accomplished by one who has you as a guide? So now then we'll see next is how then the three of them go off and then meet Jarasandha, and then how the single combat then unfolds. Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Jai Shri Prabhupada ki jai.